Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Today is Tuesday, August 25th, and I am Lynn, and I'm here with my co-host, JR. How are you, JR?
Good morning. I'm pretty good. I'm actually awesome. And yourself?
I'm doing very well. I'm doing really good. I hear you've had some excitement down at your house, JR, all kinds of fun stuff going on in Richmond, Virginia.
Yeah, I'm actually manifesting quite a bit of change for myself around here with lightning and thunder and flying computers and cars and everything else. So, yeah, it's actually pretty nice. Thank you.
Good deal. Well, that's what you get for getting ready to go on a two-week vacation to Hawaii.
Well, yeah.
You need to shake up the old so you can get relaxed and come
right.
back to something new. And with that being said, JR, I'm just going to put this out to the universe and everybody that's listening. I am a huge fan of Wayne Dyer. Never paid any attention to him before. Happened to go to I Can Do It conference in Toronto, and Spirit was adamant that I go and watch him speak. Was not drawn there to him at all. Wound up meeting him briefly and just was fascinated by his integrity, the way he treated people. So JR is going to go to Hawaii and run into Wayne Dyer and ask him to be on the Honoring Hour. That's my Christmas wish.
Well, so, you never know.
Yep, you on board with that, JR?
I'm on board. You
Good.
Know, hey, actually, it's pretty nice because I've actually not planned anything, and which is a big switch for me because I'm used to having like agenda and structure, and
yes,
I'm just gonna let it flow.
Yes, you are. Okay, so what do we need to let our listeners know today, JR, before we start our show?
Well, actually, speaking of relaxation and retreat, I really would want to invite everyone to for a long weekend of fun and relaxation at the Heart Paths Remembered Awakening to Your Soul Retreat out of Fredericksburg, Virginia. I mean, if you're looking to being ready and living a life of purpose and passion and awakening to your soul's purpose, this is a retreat and a place for you. And you can find the information for that at heartpathsremembered.com. And I would also like to mention also that for those here on the East Coast near the Richmond area, they're having their first Healthy Happenings event, which is actually an alternative health fair event in the Richmond City area. So, and you can find those information on that on our website, on my website,
on
at essentialsforliving.com. Yeah.
Right, and that is essentials-4-living.com.
Correct.
Okay. And I just want to mention briefly, September, our lineup in September has shifted a little bit. We had to have a change. So on September 8th is our meditation, which is normally later in the month. September 15th, we're going to have Jill Johns on. She owns Transformations by Jill, and she redecorates your home with what you already have in it. She's fantastic at that. And September 22nd, we're going to have Amy Herring talking about debunking astrological myths. And that leads us to our guest today, who is Jeff Brown. And I met Jeff through Facebook. And I think what drew me to him was he had posted a message that said, if you've got one foot in the present and one foot in the past, you're pissing on the future. And I knew then that was a man that had some wise stuff to say. So I'd like to welcome to the show today Jeff Brown. How are you, Jeff?
I'm great. Thank you. I'm glad to be here this morning. It's a special day today.
It is.
Yeah.
Would you like to share with everybody what's so special about today, aside from being able to share with us, which we love that you're doing?
Yeah, no, today is the official release date for the new edition of Soul Shaping. It's available to bookstores, in some bookstores, as of today. And interestingly, it's exactly 8 years to the day from the first day that I sat down to write it in Toronto in 2001. So.
Oh, right.
Very auspicious, yeah.
Right.
Fantastic.
So, Jeff, what does it feel like to have, to have this being presented to the world? I mean, this is really in manifestation now for you.
Yeah. Well, there's been so many stages of that. I mean, when I first put out the self-pub edition of it, it was already very odd and strange just to have written such a self-revealing book, and then, you know, to go to my yoga studio and some people had read it, and you know, it there's been so many levels of it as I've brought this out into the world, and this at this moment it just feels like very strange. I've been going to the bookstore in Toronto because it arrived at Indigo early, and I'm just kind of looking at the book on the shelves, and you know, none of it really makes any sense yet. This level of it, I haven't assimilated it. I haven't really, you know, come to this plateau, and then I can move forward from it. It's just a very emotional experience. You know, I feel very emotional about it this morning, and at the same time, it's just like another day on the soul shaping train. So it's going to be an interesting day, I think.
Great. Well, I'm so happy that you chose today to share with us. I was really excited when, because I started talking with you, gosh, shortly after we started the show in March, and we picked this day, and I just felt so honored that you were willing to share it with us.
Oh, yeah, right. I know. I'm glad to be here. I've listened to some of your stuff, and I felt a lot of resonance with it, so this feels like the right place to be today.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
And you talk a lot about, this is one of the things I really want to commend you on, because this is a brave move. You talk a lot about vulnerability, and you really let yourself be vulnerable. And that's such an incredible thing to model to people. Do you, you know, that's just, I really do hope that you understand how many hearts and lives you're touching by taking that leap.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's happening in a lot of ways. I mean, you know, just the stuff that's happened on Facebook, it just blows me away, the support. And I think vulnerability is definitely one of the things that's resonating. You know, I mean, you know, when I was writing the book, I really didn't understand, you know, that I was going to be writing other people's journey or modeling a particular way of being. I wasn't so conscious of that. It was just, you know, get up in the morning and honor your soul's mission. Get up in the morning and honor your, you know, whatever. Wherever the chips will fall, they'll fall. And as it turns out, this one particular piece has been very significant about like a male urban warrior type of person. You know, I was a former trial lawyer, and really ready to fly in terms of trial law, you know, deciding on some level that I had to peel away my armor and figure out who lived inside of me. And yeah, I mean, I think for a lot of women in particular who've been in relationships with men who won't and can't yet self-reveal, it's definitely had a lot of resonance for them, and that's fantastic, because really so much of my journey was about that fundamental decision internally as to whether I was going to stay adapted and, you know, really clarified in my urban focus for the rest of my days, because it's so tempting, you know, to adapt to the world and slide your way into that game and all that, or, you know, to open, just keep opening and trusting that you're going to open to something that's not going to kill you, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
And it is that opening. You know, it's when I was reading your book, I just kept getting the image of, you know, how so many people, when we're toddlers and we're learning to walk, you know, when we've got something we want to go for, we don't think about the fact that we're letting go of that coffee table, we're letting go of that couch, and we don't know how to walk yet. We have that goal in mind, and we go, and if we fall, we just keep on crawling. We just keep moving towards it. But as adults, we tend to let go. We're so much more cautious. We, you know, we might have our eye on the goal, but we're really hanging on to what keeps us going. And part of that is that we just don't let ourselves go through and feel, we don't let ourselves feel our way through. And when we do let ourselves, a lot of times we're overindulging that emotional part. So it kind of gets a bad rap.
Well, I don't know. I think that's right. You know, yeah, we get lost in it and we drown in it and all that. I mean, so much of the soul shaping journey is about letting go of habitual structures. What I call in the book your habitual range of emotion. I mean, you've got to let it go. I mean, like if you're at peace with path and you really know why you're here and you're one of those rare people that all the way through just kind of knows where you're going, it's fine. But if you're like most of us, you know, the only way to get from this kind of adapted, uncomfortable place to, you know, cross that bridge to an authentic way of being is you got to keep letting go of stuff that feels safe. You know, you can't do it too radically, because then you'll start spinning out in your anxiety and you're not going to get anywhere. You know, you have to be rooted in something as you walk along, even in friends, connections, anything. You know, I so often during the soul-shaping journey, I would go back to reading the Daily Racing Form, because when I was a kid, the Daily Racing Form was this thing, this little novelty, this analytical treat that actually gave me pleasure. I didn't have a whole lot of pleasure in my adolescent years. And so whenever I would get a little too far out into New Path, I'd go back to things like that, things that I had some kind of sentimental connection to as a way of being, before venturing back out a little farther in the next step on the New Path, you know. And I think that's the way you have to do it. But if you're someone who is so locked into hanging on to what's worked for you, you're going to have a lot of trouble moving forward on this path. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What do you offer to those people that are locked in? I mean, any words of wisdom for them? Or?
Well, if you're really locked in, you may not even know that you're locked in. So quite often the universe is going to give you the wake-down call that you need to start to open a little bit. Something's going to happen, you know. But I think that, you know, people who are just feeling that there's something not quite right and not quite sure what it is, it's to create space, lots and lots of space for this little voice inside that knows what path you're here to walk. It's just to have a little faith in that, you know, and to create some space in your daily life to spend time with that voice, because so often, and it's just so easy to not spend time with that voice in a distracted life. And I think you have to give breath to what lives inside of you, in order to get the validation that, in fact, you're moving in the right direction on this path. Yeah.
Yeah, that's so true, because we get so disconnected and, you know, we feel we're not getting anything. We're asking why. And, you know, like you're saying, it's really opening ourselves up because, I mean, they say we ask a question and spirit is answering like 40 or 50 times. Do you sense that?
Yeah, but, you know, in the oddest of ways sometimes. I mean, you have to be pretty imaginative about how you kind of envision that answer coming to you, you know. Because, you know, the setup in a survivalist culture is so rooted towards anxiety and fear-based thinking, you know, and materialism. All of that is so, it's so around us. I mean, we're saturated in it. And, you know, I think for spirit to find its way through, it's inventive. The Universal Broadcasting System finds the oddest ways to remind you that there's another path waiting for you. So you kind of have to open your inner lens a bit to the possibility that nothing's going to look the way you think it is. Even the message isn't going to come through in a predictable way. And, you know, for me, this all comes back to developing a capacity for soul tracking, like really developing a capacity to know that there's something inside of you that's truer than what you're used to or what you've been trained to think about, and then to start looking for it in strange and interesting ways. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, I know as a child, I didn't discover this until I was older, you know, actually just probably about 10 years ago it really occurred to me, but I've got a lot of trust issues, and part of that was because I never trusted what I was learning in school just didn't feel right to me. What I was being taught, you know, in society just didn't feel right to me. And it, you know, for me, what I found was that my internal guidance was really very strong, and it was letting me know then, you know, look inside yourself. And of course, I didn't have that ability or that lingo, and it just wasn't where my path was. So I've found that my trust issues have wound up being one of my greatest assets, because I really am learning how to trust both outwardly and inwardly at the same time. So it's a dual process. And so it's just as easy for me to go inward. I'm finding that the voice within me is more accurate than what I'm getting, the feedback that I'm getting from society.
Yeah, like what a concept if you think about it. I mean, we go into these buildings and they tell us what we need to know and all that. But soul shaping really begins with this premise that we each come in with particular and unique soul scriptures, you know, what James Hillman called our innate image. And that really what it is, what this life is about, is identifying what those particular scriptures are in the library of you, right? Like, what are my particular paths? What callings, learnings, and experiences am I here to move through, to transform, to learn from in the School of Heart Knocks, so that my cellular consciousness can develop? And what a thing to think that, in fact, almost everything you need to know actually were born with and lives inside of you. I mean, it's it's startling, but it's also incredibly empowering at the same time, you know. And I think that was so much about what this journey was about for me. It was like letting go of the veil, you know, of the outer knower or something, like really like letting that go and really, really appreciating that I it was inside of me, you know, that like I would have a deja vu experience, and that was actually like proof that I was actually where I was supposed to be on the path I had picked before I came in on a cellular level. What a thing. I mean, whoever tells you that, right?
Right.
You know, everything's about outer geography, not inner geography. Everything's about outer history, not your past lives. I mean, it's all mixed up. And, you know, I mean, I think that's really what it is about, is like empowering yourself and realizing, and so many of us have way too much shame to believe in ourselves enough to do this, that, in fact, we got it all already. We just have to excavate it and actualize it, and then we're exactly where we're supposed to be.
Right. And yeah. That's different for everybody, which, again, is an odd concept in our society. We're supposed to be a little bit more uniform.
Yeah, well, survivalism is really all based on uniformity. You know, we all put on a tie. We all forget that we're monkeys. We all just civilize and focus and stop acting out, and we start to build a society. This is early stages. These are the early days. They're still the early days, you know. Rule of law is just really getting embedded. I mean, you know, 1,000 years from now, they'll look back at this as like such a primitive survivalist time, like we're one step out of the dark ages, right? Mm-hmm. So when we want to make this bold move towards this more nuanced way of being on the sacred battlefield, you know, we're really going against the world around us on levels we can't even articulate, really. You know, it's just so deep inside of us. And that's why I also feel that as much as it's important to do the work, it's also important to congratulate ourselves every time we make a step beyond the outer world in terms of doing this inner work, because it's courageous and it's difficult, and we're only now beginning to feel supported in it as a culture. You know, for 20 years ago, there was very little support for the kind of things we're talking about. There was an occasional writer would pop up with a book, you know, like Be Here Now or something, but really, I think now it's starting to get embedded a little bit more in the culture that this really is the work that we need to do, yeah.
Right. Well, and again, I want to thank you for, you know, your contribution to that. And Jeff's book is Soul Shaping, A Journey of Self-Creation, and it hits the mainstream bookstores today. Is that accurate?
Yeah, it's available to, yeah, it's on back order some places, I was told, but
woo-hoo!
it's available to bookstores today, yeah.
That is so wonderful.
It's cool.
You have, you had said something in an interview I was listening to, and it's in your book, and it's Sell Your Soul, C-E-L-L, Your Soul. Can you talk a little bit about that and what that means to you?
Yeah, I mean, as my journey unfolded, I was really, you know, I'm really into embodied and grounded spirituality, and I was trying to find a way to link my emotional processes and my spirituality. I mean, I was around a lot of people who seemed to think that the emotional body was somehow substandard, that wasn't really my spirituality, that was my stuff. And that somehow my stuff and my expanding spirituality were not supposed to be connected. And it just didn't make any sense to me. You know, it seemed to me that, you know, the family was the karmic field. I mean, this was the stuff that I needed to have and work through my emotional processes in order to grow spiritually. You know, if I interfaced with one of my core issues in a habitual way, I didn't feel like I grew spiritually. If I suddenly dealt with my abandonment issues on a whole new level, it was like I felt like I grew in my spirituality. So Sell Your Soul really is the idea that the body itself and the emotional body is the karmic field where the soul's lessons are harvested, and that you go into the emotional body. You don't go halfway. You work through your material. You work through whatever has come up in a particular relationship ending, for example. And that by staying with it all the way through the conversion tunnel, all the way through the process, that's how you transform spiritually, so that your soul and your cellular body are actually inextricably linked, that there's in fact no distinction between them. And this stands in stark contrast to a lot of this Eastern stuff, or the way it's interpreted here, this idea that really your spiritual life exists independent of your personal identifications and your emotional body. And you know, that just never made any sense to me at all. I just don't know how you can pull something that's uncomfortable out of the mix on your spiritual path. I think it's all part of your spiritual path.
Right.
Yeah, I see, you know, you see that connection when you're reading your book, because that's what I resonated with, was like, you know, because, I mean, you're speaking so much truth there, and the fact that, you know, a lot of books on enlightenment out there are telling you to disconnect and, you know, just go into the nothingness.
Yeah.
And I'm reading, you're looking at your book and reading, and it's like, well, wait a minute. You know, so my clumsiness that I see within myself in this path is who I am to be in this moment. That's my
That is your spiritual life. That's your spiritual life, dude. There you go, right
exactly.
there, right? Clumsy spiritual life. Fantastic,
there you
right?
go.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, well, a lot of the people who talk this, so that frame enlightenment in that way, I mean, I use the term enrealment, which I think for me is a much better term. I want Neem Karoli Baba Maharaji and Alexander Lowen, the body-centered psychotherapist, to merge in my form of spirituality. I want my laundry list as part of my spirituality, and I want my experience of unity to be part of my spirituality. And a lot of people who are working this notion of enlightenment in that way are people who don't want to deal with their pain. I mean, it's really that simple. They've reached a point where it feels impossible, or they're being told that it's something that you don't have to focus on, and suddenly they're trying to find some spiritual experience which is nothingness. Well, you know, my grandmother was fantastic to me. I loved my grandmother. So is my grandmother was not part of my spiritual life? Only the vastness, nothingness, plunging into essence with no particular individual markers is real spirituality and enlightenment. That feels like a total bypass to me. That just doesn't feel like the path we need to take. I think we need to get out of here sometimes. We need to learn how to detach through meditation and other practices so we can see ourselves in a bigger light, because we're too localized. We're too crunched up down here. But after a while, once we get that and we see that there's some, you know, broader archetypal range available to us, we got to have tools to come back down into our body and bring it all together, you know. And hopefully soul shaping models one particular way of doing that, where you come back down and now start to work your stuff. You don't get lost in your stuff, you don't drown in your stuff, but you get into your stuff. It's the difference between a nervous breakdown, which stops you dead on the in your tracks, and a nervous breakthrough, where you get into your stuff and you work it all the way through to completion. And then you change, you know. Then you're not quite as clumsy on the path, right?
Right. You put it in really great terms in your book. You say, feel your sadness, stop the madness. And, you know, when I read that, I just thought, you know, that's really just beautifully put, because, you know, we've got this stuff going on. And in my learnings and the stuff that I've been getting in my work is that, you know, emotions are designed to flow through us. They're here to help us navigate, help us understand.
Yeah.
It's when we stop and deny them or ignore them that the body's like, okay, well, they're here. So we start to store them within our cellular structure, within our muscles. And then they're there as these foreign objects that just need to be dealt with at some time.
Exactly.
And it's causing pain and illness in our bodies.
So
well, and it's also preventing...
With...
Sorry, Jared, go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, it's also preventing us from, I mean, you know, you can't talk about the power of now if you're still in the power of then. If you're still obstructed on a cellular and cellular level, if you're holding so much anger, for example, in your body, it's like when you see people from Western culture sitting down to meditate for the first time or for the thousandth time, you know, and you feel like they're like trying really hard to like turn off the tap, all the emotionality, you know, and really, how do you do that if you don't move the feelings? You know, I mean, why do that? You know, my best meditative moments happened after emotional releases. I didn't have to sit in a cushion. I just went for a walk and I felt organically meditative because I had actually moved the stuff that was obstructing my experience of the now. So when people talk about getting in the now, they have to talk about the only way to get into the now is to clear out the past, you know, because it rules our bodies. It rules how deeply we breathe, for example. You know, if you have a lot of trauma, you may find that you're someone who doesn't breathe really deeply because you don't want to breathe into all your pain. So you developed habitually this pattern of shallowing your breath so you'll shallow your life and not feel your pain anymore. If you don't work that out, I don't really see how you're going to be able to have a deeper experience of this moment.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's why I love our bodies. I mean, working, doing energy work, it's like this is the tool, perfect tool for us in this existence, because our body is going to make us deal with it one way or another, because if we're going to be stuffing that energy, those vibrations, they're going to come up and manifest some way.
Yeah, and who says there's any distinction between the body and the soul anyway? I mean, you know,
right.
These are people's ideas of things. We can come to our own ideas of things, you know.
Right.
I mean, to me, the body is the always, you know, gave me the answers. And, you know, one of the problems is, you know, if we don't do sometimes some intense work around the body, we don't even know what's in the body. You know, an example is I went to work with Alexander Lowen when he was alive, the bioenergetics founder, and I kind of thought I knew my stuff, right? I had kind of like named it, I classified it, I'd worked out the key pieces. I was really healthy, you know. Then the dude sticks me over this breathing stool they have in bioenergetics. It almost looks like a torture rack, but it's fantastic. And he says, breathe, man. And I go, I'm breathing. And he goes, you're not breathing. And so he shows me what breathing looks like. And then I start breathing, kind of like my head's upside down over the stool. And I would breathe into so much emotional pain I was holding in that chest area that my musculature had tightened against feeling, right? So I was breathing shallow because I wasn't going to feel all that pain. And I remember lying over that stool and looking out at the world upside down, and wow, did I recognize how much more stuff was living inside of my body from the past that I didn't even know was there, you know? So sometimes you got to get extreme. You got to have a depth charge, something, strong breath work like holotropic, in order to really recognize just how much material is living inside of you. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I've been getting some Rolfing done, which has been helping me tremendously to release stuff. And I've noticed we're getting really deep. I initially went for a neck injury to kind of help get that straightened out. And about, I don't know, about 2 months ago, I told her, you know, we've hit that place where I feel like we're really here for, we're really now doing the work I came for. And since then, I've been clearing so much stuff. And that's my key. When I notice myself breathing very shallow, I'm like, okay, what's happening? That's, you know, that's it. And I had perfected the art of shallow breathing. I mean, I just did not, I could hold my breath for long periods of time. You know, when I first got married, my husband was like, are you holding your breath? And I'm like, no, but I was. He's like, no, you did. I just timed you. It's like a minute and a half. What are you doing? You know?
Wow.
So, I mean, it was habitual.
It served its purpose for you at some point in time. I mean, you know, I honor these mechanisms. They're fantastic at certain points in our lives because there are things to be breathed into that are simply unbearable at a certain stage of consciousness. We're not strong enough to handle it, whatever it is. But, I mean, I think at some point we have to start to wake the tiger up. You know, we have to and see what the tiger's holding and in order to get here, you know. So that's fantastic that you're doing that. I went through a whole phase with massage. I went to this one person who would just every week she would work 2 or 3 hours on me, and honestly, around my neck area in particular, and every week I felt like I was going back to deeper and older layers of memory from earlier in my life. It was, like, fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, anybody that is not getting body work done of some sort, it's a great tool. It's very helpful, especially when you just need, you know, it offers some support in moving stuff out of my body that I'm holding, and it's just a nice way to do it. So whatever form of body work you choose, it's always good to treat yourself, especially doing this kind of work. It's hard work to start to clear.
Yeah, you do body work, you know, you can work on the deep layers when you have space for it, but it is also just a wonderful thing for maintenance and just to experience pleasure on this very difficult path.
Yes.
It's a hard path. I mean, it really, you know, we're not set up for it yet, you know, as a culture. You know, there's little inroads, but I mean, ultimately, you know, there's a lot more, lot farther for us to travel as a collective. And so when you do this work, applaud yourself and give yourself a treat if you can afford to, because, you know, it's hard work. And it's also necessary as a matter of integration. You know, when I went through phases of like, you know, it's like I'm going to get this done really fast. I'm going to get healthy really fast, right?
Yeah.
And I didn't create the space to integrate my changes, to sort of plateau and just like rent a video and eat ice cream and just hang out. I didn't move as quickly as when I stepped back for periods of time, you know, just let myself be in this new incarnation before stepping back out into the new soul shaping journey, you know?
Right.
Yeah. You've got to be balanced about it sometimes. I think it's very important.
Yeah, and you talked about in there, someone in the book, someone pointed out to you that you would do all this tremendous work and then you would start eating foods that kind of put you backwards.
Yeah, well, that's back to habitual range of emotion. It was like I had my part and have my particular, lately it's oat fudge bars, right, at Starbucks, don't have one, don't start on that road. But, you know, that were my particular ways of and it's kind of complicated because sometimes they're just ways that have been historically comfortable, so you need that comfort, you know, comfort food in all its forms. But it's very subtle. You have to know yourself pretty well as to what you're up to, because at other times it was just became a hiding place, right? It was like, whoa, this is really lonely, and this is really hard work, and I don't want to do this. I don't want to live this kind of life. I want to be able to turn it off the way I see others turn it off. And so it's a little bit tricky. And food is, of course, one of the most fantastic ways to shove down your emotions. You know, if you fill your digestion, you fill your system up, your body's always working to digest food, particularly food you're allergic to, then you're always in a state of either agitation or sleepiness. So in a way, you don't really have to be that vulnerable. You know, and that's only one of, as we all know, millions of ways that we can distract. And I think for everyone, it's the work is so personal to understand how they distract from their material. You know, and this comes back to knowing yourself and to doing the work to spend time with what lives inside of you and not listening to anybody else, you know, just figuring it out for yourself and calling yourself on your stuff. And I called myself on my stuff a lot, and that was a very important part of the process.
Right. You know, that's one of the things that when I'm talking with people and listening to people, people have a, they find it challenging to spend time with themselves, especially with all the media that they can, you know, the radio, the iPods, you know, satellites, you know, they just, it's really hard for them to turn stuff off and just listen to their own thoughts.
Yeah, well, a lot of organizations are making a lot of money from distracting us. You know, unconscious consumerism preys on the uncentered. The more uncentered you are, the more you're going to buy stupid things. I mean, that's the way it is. It's not to say that everything we buy is stupid. There are things that are good and helpful and satisfying, but you know, that whole, there's a whole system built around substitute gratifications for God and true path, and you have to recognize that. You have to recognize that when you're being, you know, overwhelmed by the unconscious media telling you there's a depression because they sell more newspapers, if you're scared because you're more likely to buy them because you don't want to miss out on the key piece of news you need to survive, you got to really understand that that's what's happening, that they're trying to pull you back to an old survivalist way of being, an anxiety-ridden way of being, which is, in a way, the enemy of your sacred path. I mean, this is a sacred battleground. There are dark forces. It doesn't mean they're sitting there thinking darkly or thinking about it this way. It's just a structure that's been established over time, right? But, you know, you got to really learn, like, you know, selective attachment. Like, what do I want near me? What do I not want near me? What makes it easier for me to unfold on my path? And what makes it really hard, and try to avoid the things that are keep pulling you out of your center, because they're everywhere. There's absolutely true. They're absolutely everywhere. Mm-hmm. That's why I went on retreats a lot. I mean, I had to get out of the city, and I had to get out of my daily life and how I had adapted as a personality to as a salesman and all that, and just to know myself and to hear myself in a different way. It's very, very important.
Right. And you had some pressure from, you know, your peer group, your friends, people that expected you to, you know, continue on with your path of law. So you had
I'm a firstborn Jew from a poor family, so already I was in trouble, you know, trying to walk away from this what seemingly secure path, you know, that was egoically gratifying and where I could take care of my family, who all of them who have a hard time making their way in the world. And so there was that, and then there was literal feedback from, you know, more conservative or mainstream, you know, people. And I remember there was this one guy, I was on vacation, he was just sort of like an older conservative guy who'd made it in that world, right? And part of me really identified with him, you know, he was like very efficient. And I remember just how he was sort of dissing me for, like, how could I walk away from that. Eddie Greenspan was the lawyer I work with in Canada, who's very well known here, and you know, and how could I walk away, and I remember that really registered in me. You know, he was like the type of guy I'd always respected as a young guy, and it took me a long time. Now I think I've worked it out, but it took me a long time to really extricate myself from internalizing that message, because, you know, I mean, that was the message of the culture. I mean, it reflected what I already felt inside on a lot of different levels, and yeah, I mean, I think that was the most courageous part of the path, was doing the work inside to give breath to this other voice that said, walk your own way. Just walk your own way. They don't know nothing, because they're powerful, right? And there was a lot, and there was a lot of them, you know. And then there was just me, and it, you know, having this little experience of, but wait a minute, there's this little voice inside of me that says that's not my path. And I mean, you really got to believe in yourself. You absolutely have to. And if you have too much shame or too much self-doubt, then that's the therapeutic piece of getting into therapy and working on doing enough work to build your self-concept so when that voice pipes up in your inner world, you actually can take it seriously, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree. And that's what I was going to ask, you know, for people that are out there, you know, you found your inner strength. And you had the resources also. You were very fortunate to have the resources to be able to go and have therapy and do a bunch of different things. But for people that do not have the financial resources at the moment, there's still ways that they can go ahead and begin to do this. Do you have any words of wisdom for them?
Well, I mean, the first thing I say is I created the resources myself. I mean, I certainly wasn't born to them. So there, you know, if you do enough work, you start to get enough energy, some of us can find ways on an entrepreneurial level to actually create more income for ourselves, you know. I mean, I know it's not a simple thing, but, you know, it is about having enough of a drive and a focus and to really want to create space for this other path. See, that's what starts to happen is you start to get on this spiritual path, and if you start to realize it's really your life, like it's your real life, and that you really want to nourish it and move forward on it, and then you start to find ways economically sometimes to create a better reality for yourself. For those who are in situations where that's not realistic or possible, I think the first thing to start to do, apart from trying to get into a therapy practice or therapy situation, even one that's like a counseling-based situation at a community center, somewhere where you don't have to pay. Like in Canada, you can see psychiatrists, for example, on OHIP, which is Medicare. But I think the other thing is to try to find people, just create a community of individuals who are also like members of your soul pod who are also looking to move forward in their spiritual lives to support you in your path. And I think that's one of the most important things for people who are not in a position to go off to Harbin Hot Springs for 2 weeks. It's to start to build community, you know, one individual at a time. And I think that's very important.
Mm-hmm. Great advice. And I have found in watching other people and working with people and even in my own life, the more in alignment I am with my soul and who I am on that level and the more true I am to myself, money comes to me in different ways. I mean, I've always been provided for and I've always been very grateful for that. You know, money just turns up when I need it. So, and if I really want to do something, the universe will send that extra cash my way.
Yeah, I mean, you want to empower people like that. Sorry, Jay, you want to empower people to believe that they can create their own reality, but at the same time hold the space for the fact that there are people's circumstances that prevent that from happening. Not everybody has that karma, and some people's karma is to run around really with no money and to do work in that area, and, you know, but to still hold out for the possibility that those individuals can find a way to connect to others on the spiritual path, you know, with or without money. You know, I mean, when it comes down to it, I mean, really, you know, thankfully, I developed a business where I could go off and do this work. Absolutely. And I love and honor my customers. I think about them so fondly now for creating that possibility for me. But, you know, at the same time, so much of the most beautiful stuff that happened just walking down the street, relating to my inner world. And that didn't cost me anything at all.
And that's the key, too, is connecting there and realizing as you're breathing in your environment in a new light, seeing it in a new perception, then you're going to see the opportunities that will be presented to you to be able to work this path easier, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, your inner lens keeps transforming. You know, the room that you're living in for 20 years starts to look like a different room when something changes inside. You can move it around on the outside 20 times, but eventually it's going to just feel like the same old room. But if you create more space in your inner house, I mean, you know, as almost cliche as it sounds, things start to look different. I mean, I've lived in this house for 12 or 13 years, and this house looks different to me every time I go through a transformation. You know, everything around me starts to look completely different. It's like I'm still in the localized feeling in the room, but now the room is infused with the energy of my divine purpose. You know, for example, I'm sitting here talking to you in the back room where I wrote Soul Shaping, and this room, I never knew what to do with this room. You know, it was like, what is this room? It had this lovely little sunroom. It was like, but it meant nothing to me. And then I brought my book into here, started to write all over the walls, and suddenly this room becomes wonderful. I just feel completely different in this environment and can't get enough of it. And that's because my inner lens changed. You know, inner begets outer. I mean, and eventually they meet on a bridge of golden light. That's what happens. And in the culture, we start too much from the outside and work outside towards the inside, and it doesn't work that way. You got to go from the inside and then work outside. And then the outside starts to change, and you start to get more feedback from the outside that allows you to open even more on the inside. But you've got to start on the inside. It's the whole key to the whole thing.
Right. So you're saying you literally went into that room and started to write on the wall.
Yeah, this wall. I'm going to start a new book, so I've covered the walls with paper. I can't bring myself to paint over these walls, you know. I wrote all over the walls. I've been writing on walls for years. I've been writing on my hands for years. I used to write on my legs when I was 13. I think I was born to be a writer or a crazy human being or both. I just write everywhere. I wrote on my yoga block, you know, when I would channel stuff for soul shaping when I was in class. I was in a Sean Korn class once, and I just started to write all over that yoga block. Good stuff that's in the book, actually. So, yeah.
See, and that's one of the things that I really want people to hear because – you know, we're taught, you know, don't write on the walls. You learn that. But, you know, you just really followed your instincts. It's like, oh.
I trust it. That's it. And I don't have an explanation for why I did that. I just somehow got it at some age that there was some part of me, sorry, that got it, that they didn't know anything. Right? When I was 12, I wrote, in accordance with the rules, as dictated by the heroes, we all must be as one with but no exceptions. I was really getting that this conformity thing, these so-called societal heroes, were kind of directing traffic. And there was a part of me that just, you know, just didn't believe it. They just, like you didn't in the school experience, right? Just didn't believe them. And, you know, and then once you, it's a very different way of being. You know, it's like someone's driving down the road. You see this all the time. And then a car comes out and all they have to do is move over to the left, cross the line, 2 feet, then come back in again. But they don't. They stop because they're really believing that you've got to stay in the lines. They're believing that societal mantra. And the only way I got anywhere on the path was shifting over to the other lane and just trusting that my inner knowing was really going to be the one directing traffic. And that's it. And then you don't, you know, you put on a stupid hat, you walk out, you're in your artist zone, you're in mission position, you're in your soul mission, you're moving, you know. And you don't care. You're so self-referencing or soul-referencing, you just don't care what anybody else thinks because they don't know. You know, they can't open your soul scriptures, only you can. So once you get that, it's like it doesn't matter anymore. It just stops mattering.
Right. And that is so beautifully put. You know, that is one thing. I've been the oddball in my family, and when I started embracing that and just being okay with that and not living it from a rebel perspective, but just honoring perspective.
Yeah.
It's like, yay.
Yeah, well, you're a rebel with a cause, right? I mean,
exactly.
You really are then.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So.
You know, one of the ways I really experienced this more in the last couple of years was I developed this soul-shaping dictionary, this new language stuff that comes through as part of the path, and now I'm on Facebook. It's happening all the time on my status. And, you know, for a long time, I would think, people would tell me, you're crazy. This is crazy. It was like kitschy language, you know, nervous breakthrough. It was like, what is this? And I would hear a voice sometimes inside of me saying, dude, you're crazy. You know, this stuff is crazy. You know, it's like, and, you know, but I kept at it. I couldn't help it. I was, you know, writing on my hands. I mean, I couldn't stop. And leaving my messages on my answering machine, filling it up all the time with new language. And now, finally, because I guess the culture is more ready to sort of embrace these new lexicons, these things we're working with in the culture, now I'm getting positive feedback and I feel completely freed and encouraged, you know, but for the longest time, because the outer world wasn't really ready for that kind of language, I wasn't really completely able to surrender to it. And I think that's part of the path. You just keep making these little leaps of faith that whatever your inner world is directing you to is actually exactly where you need to go. And maybe if you're lucky, somewhere along the way, the world's going to jump up and say, hey, that was fantastic. But it may never happen. I mean, you just have to keep going, though. You have to keep trusting it, because there's nothing else to trust. You know, if you can't trust your inner knowing, who can you trust, right?
That's a great.
I mean, it's so ridiculous. It's like so simple in a way, but it's who? My grandfather didn't know what path. He would have been happy if I was working at the gas station. You know, it was, you know, they, you know, for him, from where he came from, that was a step up. You know, it was like some economic security of some sort. You know, who knows anything except you? You know, nobody, absolutely nobody. I have not sat before a single person, a single guru, ever, anybody who knew anything more about my path than I did. It's just, I never had the experience Ram Dass had with Neem Karoli Baba, who could see right inside of him. You know, I've never encountered it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the only thing I found that I could trust was whatever my little Missy inside of me said.
Right. Well, and you kind of gave way to her kicking and screaming.
Mm-hmm.
In the
yeah,
book.
She won the day. She took down to Warrior, man. No, she did. I mean, for those who don't know, Little Missy was what my warrior self, who I identified myself as early in the path, called that little voice that knew inside of me, you know, and called it that in a very disparaging way, like, what do you know, you know? And over time, this negotiation between that warrior self and this Little Missy, this guiding angel, was really at the heart of my path, and eventually it became very obvious that she actually knew what was best for me, and yeah. I mean, I think that's one thing I would encourage people to do, is to actually name their inner knowing. You know, find a name for it. See it as a separate entity that's here whispering sweet somethings in your ear, directing you in the direction that you ought to go. Yeah.
Great. Now, when you are getting, like when you're questioning, you know, are you crazy, do you have like a set of questions that you ask yourself? For me, when I'm doing something and I start to doubt myself, because that's really what it is, you know, I ask myself, you know, am I having fun? Am I hurting someone? Do I feel good?
Nice.
And, you know, if all of those are goes, you know, then I'm like, then I can be crazy. Good for me. Do you
yeah.
have a set of questions or like a
no.
guideline?
No. No, that I think that's you should write a book about that. That's absolutely fantastic. I used to look in the mirror a lot, you know. Yeah, I mean, when I would feel like I was crazy, I would look in the mirror and ask myself if I was crazy. But, you know, unfortunately, even if you're really crazy, you're probably going to tell yourself you're not crazy. So, you know, it's a bit complicated, but hopefully you start to reside in a place that's pretty, pretty. You know, it's so complicated because I think this is really the artist journey, this soul-shaping path. And, you know, and so much of the artist journey is you keep stepping out into new structures or structureless places and that feel crazy because crazy, you know, what's sane is normally defined as what's familiar, what's normal, what we normally encounter. And so you kind of learn to sort of go to bed at night with this kind of chaotic stuff. You know, Nietzsche said you must have chaos within to give birth to a dancing star. So it's a little complicated, but if you do it enough and you start to feel more soul satisfaction, like you say, feeling good, then you start to get like internal feedback that in fact that even if you are crazy, you really don't care because you're moving in the right direction, right?
Right. Well, and then you got to look at who's defining crazy. Where are you getting that definition to?
Yeah, and who has license to? I mean, who are we granting, you know, it comes back to this whole shame thing. It's like, who do we grant, you know, the license and actually believe that they know what sane is? I mean, I haven't met too many that I would want to be holding the space for that definition for me or for anybody else. I mean, you know, very few of us step so far out of the stage the collective unconscious is at where they can actually be the defining being. I mean, they're almost impossible to find. So again, and it's almost lonelier and more isolating. It's sometimes nice to believe there's, I used to say to my therapist, just tell me what to do. Just give me 5 minutes of feeling like you know where I'm supposed to walk next. And so, you know, we'd play her for 5 minutes. I wouldn't listen to her anyway because I knew she didn't know and only I would know. But, you know, it is like a bit of you have to really be ready to take responsibility for your life to do this path completely, because really what you're going to do is hold yourself accountable every step of the way. And for those of us who want to remain regressed and blaming and victims and all the rest of it, you know, it's a radical shift in perception. Because now it's really your life, and you're shaping your inner world with your own two hands. Whoa, talk about adult responsibility. That's pretty intense.
Right. But, and you know, I think it seems to me like a lot of people are intimidated by that responsibility. We're constantly surrendering to outside sources. But it's so good. It feels so good when you claim that responsibility. To me, it does. It's just...
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, don't you see, it just seemed like life got a lot easier.
Yeah, well, you're lucky.
In a way, yeah.
Yeah, in a way. I mean, I think it's all about where, you know, do you just want to survive in your life, in which case play by the rules, although as we found out in America a year ago, that even that isn't really working anymore, which is interesting. Or do you want to, you know, really live a more authentic existence? It's a radical, those two goals are fundamentally so different from each other. You know, because survivalism, you really do learn how to play the game most effectively. That's your focus. Mm-hmm. How do I achieve societal success? Buy all the books, you know, talk to people who've done it, you know, do what they did. And for a lot of us, it'll work, you know. But if you're going, if authenticity, if your idea of success is more essence-driven or essence-sourced, everything is different, you know. And there are no books, you know. I mean, there's a bunch of Eastern books that don't really integrate the Western quest for emotional health. There's a bunch of Western books focusing on the psychological piece, but not focusing on the spiritual piece. So you're really out there on your own trying to bring all this stuff together. And, you know, I mean, it's a fantastic journey. You know, I'm so much more gratified on this path now than I was in the hard years. But you got to be ready, you know, for a hard path. And you got to find your soul pod. And that's why places like Facebook are fantastic for supporting path. I mean, that's why I only have good things to say about those social connection sites, because it allows people in isolated places to feel like they're not alone with this anymore.
Right. Right. And I don't know that I would use, I mean, I understand, JR, what you're saying about it got easier. It, for me, you know, I certainly had, you know, I questioned what in the world, you know, you just took the path, you definitely did not take the path of least resistance. But it was more empowering. You know, I've never regretted following my soul. I've never regretted that at all. Whereas there's definitely been times where when I've not followed it, I've been like, wow, did I just make life a little bit more challenging?
Well, I don't mean that I don't have the challenges. I mean, what I was referring to is that I guess our receptivity, our reception of the lessons that we receive, we're receiving it easier because we're looking at it with a new pair of eyes.
And the door's open.
Right. Exactly. Versus life attacking me.
Yeah, totally. Well, kind of like what Lynn says is true also. I mean, I certainly found on this path, of course, I feel so much more satisfaction and clarity of focus every day. But, you know, as I unfolded on this path, I felt like I just got more here. And here meant everything. It meant, you know, lighter and more joyous at times. But it also meant, you know, that I was feeling the suffering of the world more than I was in my armored stages, you know. I never, ever identified that the ultimate path was one of absolute ecstasy and bliss. I don't believe it. I just don't think that's reality. And that what, for me, moving forward meant was that I was going to be able to hold the space for everything again after shutting down in my adolescence, after breathing more shallow, you know, becoming unavailable to the moment on a lot of different levels. Very convenient, you know, I feel what felt easy and good and not feel the rest, and as a matter of mechanism. And I mean, that's for me what enrealment is. It's just moving in the direction of just becoming more authentic in every respect, and for sure lighter, and for sure more open, but also able to feel, you know, the loss of a friend more intensely than you would have when you were 15, for example.
Right, right. And I know for myself, I have found, like, relationships that I just, and speaking of my family relationships, that I fought to try to make better, or where I felt judgment, when I really opened up and started trusting myself, even though it was not what they were wanting me to do, I am more accepted now by those people that I was trying to fight for acceptance from than, you know, than when I was, you know, doing what they wanted me to do. It's like it didn't matter what I did because I wasn't true to myself, so I could never make them happy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, a lot of people are afraid of people who are going for authenticity because it brings up in them the part that wants to do that too, and for various reasons has felt they had to shut that down, you know. And your resonance probably just calls out to them. They're probably more comfortable to be in your energy because you're being true to path, right?
Yeah, right. So I wanted to ask you before we start to run out of time, you've mentioned energy a couple of times. Do you find that there's a difference between a lack of energy when you're not honoring yourself and when you're just feeling a little worn out and exhausted from so much shifting and change?
Energetic differences between those two states?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. You know, like when I would resist the path the most and not honor Little Missy and just like really try to divert and avoid and all that, that when I was depleted, it was really a deadened feeling. It was like there was an agitation and a deadness about it. And even now, you know, when I'm like, even today, like overtired from all that's happening around me, it's a totally different energy, you know. I mean, it's like more like I need to lie down for a little bit, but then I'll come right back up into a strong place because it's, you know, transformational processes. Because even for me now, like I thought, oh, I'll write the book and then I'm kind of there, wherever there is. Well, I'm only at the beginning of a new journey, which is dealing with all of my issues around exposure, you know, being in the public, all that stuff, which I've called to myself. And, you know, in terms of the way that it relates to me energetically, it's like even when I get really tired, I'm still really alive to this process because the exhaustion is coming from trying to work my material on a deeper level. Yeah, it's a totally different feeling. I mean, I think you're more likely to get diseased when you're off your path than when you're on your path and just working like a dog. You know, I wrote Soul Shaping. It's been an eight-year-long journey, and I think I've had two colds. And I basically was like sometimes sleeping 3-4 hours a night. I mean, I was just so called to do this. But I almost never got sick. I mean, touch wood that continues. But, that you know, years ago, I was getting sick all the time in my 20s when I was resisting the words a little missy. All the time. Yeah.
Great. Well, I just wanted to say that we've got some people in the chat room who I have not forgotten. JR normally monitors the chat room, and that's definitely his area of expertise. And Sunny J had mentioned when we were back talking about releasing that R.D. Lang spoke at length about releasing in his book Knots, K-N-O-T-T-S. So they mentioned that. So I just wanted to say that, you know, JR is definitely the chat room monitor, and I apologize for not.
He's flying computer today, though.
Right. He doesn't
no
have a computer.
Right.
Right. He got struck by lightning, so we're doing things a little different here.
There's a lot of emotional release stuff out there. R.D. Lang's a brilliant writer, and I think I actually have the book Knots. But Bioenergetics is fantastic. You read any of Alexander Lowen's stuff or John Parakos's core energetics material relates a lot to emotional release. Even Janov's Primal Scream stuff, which seems a little extreme sometimes, but he wrote a book, I think it was like The Return of Primal Scream, even the foreword in that book, talking about the relationship between neurosis and emotional holdings. Absolutely brilliant stuff that anybody on the path should take a look at. Yeah, it's such an important component of it. Even holotropic breath work. You know, not everyone has a spiritual or like a essence-centered experience during breathworks. Quite often, all the emotional material comes up first, and that's a wonderful vehicle for moving the material out of our bodies.
Right. And, Jeff, your book, again, is Soul Shaping, A Journey of Self-Creation,
yeah.
And it's in the bookstores, and you also have a website that is www.soulshaping.com.
Yeah.
You're on Facebook, and you're on Facebook regularly, too. So it's a great place to keep up with what's going on with you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So we're getting to the top of the hour. So I wanted to thank you again for being here. You know, once again, I was so pleased and so honored that you chose today to be on the show because I know it's a huge day for you, and we wish you all the best.
Thank you
so much. Absolutely. Thank you, Jeff, for keeping your book very real for everyone.
Right on. Right on. In realment, that's the way we go. Fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You got it.
So. Great. All right. And with that said, I'd like to say thank you to Dana and Ariana Agnolini, who have been so gracious in letting us use their song One Light at a Time. And we always sign off of that when we get really close and can't start another topic. So thank you all for being here. Jeff, good luck. And we hope to hear you all back on the Honoring Hour.